This is Fresh Air. Neil Sheehan covered the Vietnam War for the New York Times throughout most of the 60s. It was the experience that shaped his life, and he's been trying to come to terms with it ever since through his writing. When Sheehan left Vietnam, he began working on a book about the war. In 1988, A Bright Shining Lie was finally published and went on to win a Pulitzer Prize and a National Book Award. The book combines biography and history to capture the failures and contradictions of America's involvement in Vietnam. Sheehan returned to Vietnam in 1989 to visit the country that had had such a major impact on his life. He went to Hanoi and Saigon and traveled through the countryside. He writes about the flood of memories and his impressions of Vietnam today in a new book called After the War Was Over. Sheehan told me that almost 20 years later, he could still see evidence of the damage caused by our war in Vietnam.
I went to a place called Ben Suk, which had been deliberately devastated. It was north of Saigon in the rubber plantation country. It was in a communist base area called the Iron Triangle. And the U.S. Army had gone in there and just leveled it, moved everyone out and leveled this village. And then the place had been bombed. And I went back to see what had happened, and these people had come back in 1975 and rebuilt the whole thing at great cost to themselves. About 50 people had been killed by unexploded ordnance, which is very dangerous. People are still being killed by that all the time in Vietnam. And they had reconstructed this place at great, great cost to themselves. But when you walked behind someone's house, there was a bomb crater. Bamboo was growing in it, but it was still there. They said the defoliation had caused, they felt permanent damage to the fertility of the soil. The whole rubber plantation behind the village had been destroyed, and they had replanted 5,000 rubber trees. You see that kind of damage everywhere in the countryside, particularly in the south, if you look.
What kind of attitude did you find towards you? I assume you identified yourself as a journalist who covered the war in Vietnam. Generally speaking, how did the Vietnamese respond to you?
I was quite surprised at the way they responded to me. I would assume, I went there assuming that the Vietnamese would show a lot of resentment toward an American. They have every reason to show resentment toward an American. Obviously, we caused a lot of damage to their country. We fought a long war with them. But I was amazed at their lack of animosity toward Americans. Let me give you an example.
Yeah, please do.
My wife Susan and I were going up to a town on the China border called Lang Son, which the Chinese had seized in 1979 in another war the Vietnamese had to fight after winning their independence from the United States and France. And we had a flat tire, and we stopped by the road in a village to get the tire fixed. And I was standing, I'd gone through the village and talked to people, and I was standing out beside the road, and this man came down on a bicycle. He was a farmer, poor man, gray hair, raggedy clothes, very decrepit bicycle. And he saw me, and you don't see many foreigners in villages in the countryside, and he stopped his bicycle as soon as he saw me, and he pointed his finger at me, and he said, in Vietnamese, Lien So, which is Russian. Are you a Russian? I shook my head, and I said, me, American. Ah, he smiled, and he said, Tot, which is good. And then he, by that time, the interpreter who was with me started to kick in, and he said to me in Vietnamese, Americans are good. I said, thank you. And then he said to me, Vietnamese are good, too. Do you agree? I said, yes, I agree. He said, I was a veteran. I fought in the South. I said, where did you fight? And he told me, and then I questioned him about what unit he'd been. I wanted to make sure he really was a veteran, because he said to me, I am a veteran. I fought in the South. And then I said to him, the fighting was really terrible in that area. He'd fought in the rubber plantation area north of Saigon, where the fighting was really awful. And he bent over, and it turned out he was prematurely gray, and he'd lost most of his teeth. He was not that old. And he pointed at his gray hair and he said, yes, so many bombs, so many shells, so much fighting, my hair turned like this. And then he put out his hand and he said to me, Hoa Binh, as he took my hand, which is Vietnamese for peace. Hmm. And then he got on his bike and he rode off down the road. Now, nobody told that man to do that.
Well, how do you explain that? How do you explain this particular man and I assume other people in Vietnam having this generous attitude towards American people?
At first I had no explanation for it, because initially I hadn't, when initially in Hanoi, where we went first, when officials treated us without animosity, I was of course suspicious that this was policy. When I ran into the reality of it, like this farmer in the countryside, I then began to really look for an explanation. The best explanation I could find was, because we ran into it in a number of places, was that It comes out of the history of Vietnam's wars with China, the repeated wars with China. The Vietnamese have been shaped by their geographic proximity to China. They sit right on the border of this big empire. And they won their independence after 1,000 years of Chinese colonization in the 900s. And then since then, they have had to fight repeated wars with China, because every time a new dynasty came to power in China, not always Chinese, the Mongols, for instance, in the 1300s, the 1200s, excuse me, the communists in the 20th century, every time a new dynasty comes to power with China, it inevitably invades Vietnam, as the communist emperor Deng Xiaoping did in 1979. And the Vietnamese have had to fight these wars, but then at the end, as they said to me, you can't stay enemies with the Chinese. They're too big. So first you beat them to get your independence and keep to maintain your independence, and then you make peace. And it's part of, I think, the historical cycle of Vietnam, that after the war is over, now it's time to make peace.
Did you find major differences between the North and the South? And did you find Vietnam was a unified country? Or is there still the legacy of the fighting that divides the country?
There are enormous differences between the North and the South. The one thing that unites the country is the nationalism, the sense the Vietnamese have of being Vietnamese, which again comes out of this proximity with China. The North is a place where the Vietnamese have lived for thousands of years. I'm talking now about the Red River Delta in the North, right up next to China. It's a very traditional area. People are very hardworking because it's overcrowded and impoverished. Not only is Hanoi one of the most densely populated cities in Asia, but per square acre, but the Red River Delta, which is a very narrow delta, is one of the most heavily populated rural areas in Asia. So it's terribly difficult for these people to make a living. The climate's very inhospitable, but they're very tradition-bound. They're very conscious of how long they have lived on this land. I mean, the original Vietnamese capital that existed before the Chinese invaded, way back in, I think, 111 BC, is only 15 kilometers from Hanoi. But when you go down south, you're in a totally different environment. The Vietnamese have only lived in the south since the 1700s. And it's the south is like Vietnam's California, and Saigon is its Los Angeles. I mean, it's a free and easy in the sense of very creative, freewheeling atmosphere.
You describe the difference between Hanoi and Saigon as something that you observed in Saigon, which is a military security officer was having a rather expensive lunch, and he had a gold ballpoint pen in his breast pocket. And you say, really, in the South, people feel more free to openly flaunt corruption.
Or their individual wealth. Yes, you would never see that kind of thing in Hanoi. I mean, there's corruption in Hanoi. There's corruption in the South. The corruption, by the way, is not nearly on the scale it existed during the war in terms of the Saigon government was totally corrupt. Everything was for sale.
Neil Sheehan is my guest today on Fresh Air, and we're talking about his trip to Vietnam, also about some of his memories of the war there. He covered the war in the 60s for the New York Times. He returned to that country in 1989, and he's written about it in a new book called After the War Was Over. We're going to take a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is journalist Neil Sheehan. How do the Vietnamese talk about their missing in action?
They don't talk about them unless you ask. When you ask, they talk very freely about them. Let me give you an example again. I went to see, one of the first people I went to see was the editor of the military newspaper in Hanoi. He's a man who spent his life fighting the war was fairly free, was a man who talked quite freely. He was about to retire. He was a general named Tran Kong Man. He said to me, we have no way of knowing how many missing in action we have. There are hundreds of thousands of them. A figure's been put up of 300,000. But that's not reliable because they have no idea. People simply disappeared in the intensity of the fighting. And, of course, the Americans did not bury the bodies of Vietnamese in any respectable fashion. We just, if we buried them at all, they were shoved in a pit somewhere with a bulldozer.
Well, what do you make, then, of the efforts in this country to recover Americans missing in action? There are still many people in this country that believe that Americans are still being held prisoner of war in both Laos and Vietnam. In the context of having been back to Vietnam and seen how they remember their missing in action, how do you make sense of what's going on in this country?
I think the missing in action issue in this country has become as traumatic as it has because the war was such a trauma to us. I mean, it was a trauma to deal with. It was a trauma. I described to you my emotions, which I describe in the book, of going back to Vietnam and the flood of these memories coming back to you. But when you go to Vietnam, you spend some time in the country, you realize that there aren't any missing in action in the sense that there are Americans alive there, prisoners who are being held against their will.
What makes you so sure about that?
Because, first of all, the country's a very open country. There are a lot of people wandering through the country. I ran into members of the Irish Water Board on a UN project in Hanoi. I mean, the Americans, you have American veterans going through that. There was a French cardinal I ran into in Hanoi. He was back saying masses to the Catholic community there on a tour from the Vatican. There have been rewards out for years about information for missing in action. If the Vietnamese had a group of prisoners, the information would have gotten out. Somebody would come forward with it, if only for the reward, number one. Number two, it would be physically very difficult to keep people like that alive. You're talking about something that's going on 20 years now. The last Americans that could have been shot down would have been in 1972. I'm talking about American military during the war because we pulled out in January 73. So, and when you go to the north and you see a city which is so incredibly impoverished, you go to hospitals which wouldn't pass inspection as animal hospitals in this country. This is a country where the senior leadership of the country doesn't even have decent medical facilities. How would they keep foreigners alive in a prison for going on 20 years, and why? It would be enormously expensive for them. It would, and very, very difficult, because Americans require much more high caloric diet than Vietnamese. That's why one of the reasons our prisoners suffered so much in the north from the diet, and particularly those in the south. I had a friend who spent 7 years in the south, whom I mentioned in the first book. And so it would be physically very difficult for them to do it, and it doesn't make any sense. I think the Vietnamese, the value of the American prisoners had to the Vietnamese existed up to 1973, at the time of the Paris Accords. And after that, holding Americans prisoner wouldn't be of any value to them. They wouldn't get anything out of it, to be crass about the whole thing. So it doesn't make sense. I found no evidence that there are any missing in action in Vietnam, and I don't think it would make sense for the Vietnamese to be holding Americans.
Do you think it's time to normalize relations with Vietnam, or do you think it's long overdue?
I think it's long overdue. I don't think we're going to get normalization until after this election, because the MIA issue is a very powerful issue, and I don't think any politician wants to normalize relations with the Vietnamese while we're facing an election and they could lose the votes of people who think the Vietnamese are holding prisoners. By the way, I want to emphasize that I really sympathize with the families involved. And I don't think that issue is ever going to be settled. There will always be people who think there are missing in action. But I think normalization is long overdue. We should have normalized relations with the Vietnamese long ago. We could have settled issues like this missing in action issue much earlier. That is, in terms of finding out what we can find out. If we had used a lot more carrot and a lot less stick, what the U.S. government has been doing is beating the Vietnamese over the head as often as they can with the economic embargo and other hostile actions. And I think it's time to end it. It's time to make peace out of a simple sense of decency, not just for their sake, but for ours as well. It's a decent thing to do. The war is over. However you look at the war, it was a mistake, whether you say it was fought in the wrong way, whether you say it was an unjust war. I mean, everyone agrees it was a mistake. It was a fantasy on the part of the American leadership to think that the Vietnamese posed any threat to us. They didn't. All they ever wanted us to do was to go home. So, we caused terrible damage to these people as well as to ourselves. It was a tragedy for both nations, and I think it's time to make peace.
Neil Sheehan's latest book about Vietnam is called After the War Was Over. This is Fresh Air.